Good morning, TNC family. On this first Sunday in August, where today here we start a brand new series about signals we receive in our lives and then about the shifts that need to take place in our lives because of the signals. Maybe think about traffic signals, green, yellow, red, and depending on the brightest signal and our state of mind at the time, in a hurry or not, distracted or not, we shift our driving habits. And this is the same in life. We get signals all the time. We're going through life and we take in an experience, a sight, sound, taste, touch, or smell. And along with it comes a flash, a signal of fear, joy, motivation, hunger, stop, go, caution, envy, curiosity, and so on. And in response to that signal, we have the opportunity to shift our behavior. Now, truth is, every day we are bombarded by a continual flow of thoughts and feelings, and they are not always consistent. Brittany and I are spending a fair bit of time watching the Olympics together and loving it, and I always admire and I'm inspired by the discipline and the hard work of the athletes, who tend to be pretty disciplined and steady in their life routines in preparation for their high performance. And as we've been watching, I feel especially motivated when between like two swimming heats or gymnastics rotations, they do little biographies of the athletes. And I'm like, yes, yes, I feel it. I'm going to start eating better. Spinach, steel cut oats, kale, and 4 egg whites for breakfast and working out twice a day. And then they'll break for a commercial. And I'll go to the cupboard and grab some sweet honey barbecue chips and a root beer with a bag of marshmallows because, yep, I like eating marshmallows. And because, yep, feelings are fickle and my emotions and thoughts can move all over the place, shift and change multiple times throughout any given day. Like I can wake up full of excitement and hope and then see one text or bit of news from the night before and see my joy meter going straight down by 8 a.m. in the morning. But then feel energized again about 9 after a morning walk and a podcast that gives me a fresh perspective. But then feel discouraged when I find out that someone else took credit for something I think I maybe should have received credit for. But then I can talk to a friend who builds into me and makes me feel loved and connected and important. But then be in discouraging funk on the drive home for some reason. But then an awesome 80s hit gives me energy and feelings of nostalgia. And then as I'm nearing home and thinking about how the next few hours are going to be stress-free and good and all that, it just goes back and forth, back and forth. And this is how life works. We're going through life and we experience something, a sight, sound, taste, touch, or smell, which prompts a thought or feeling. And at the heart of that thought or feeling is a signal. And what makes humans different from all other creation is when we take in that thought or that feeling, we have the opportunity to not just respond with instinct, but to also sort out what it is signaling, which is a good thing. Most archaeologists, geologists, historians understand that what differentiated us Homo sapiens from the Homo Neanderthals, for example, or the Homo heidelbergensis, or the Homo erectus, the reason we still exist today and those groups didn't continue to thrive is a prefrontal cortex. Essentially, we had the ability to take in emotions and their signals, to think about them, organize them, talk about them, cultivate, articulate, habituate, think ahead, create, take in all this stimuli, and then process what it means for the life well lived, which gave us an advantage. The key, of course, is process all of these stimuli, these signals, intelligently. Because you can be intellectually smart, good at math or memorization, but emotionally and psychologically not smart, unable to process, respond well to your emotions, thoughts, and feelings. Several years ago, there's a guy named Daniel Goleman, a Harvard PhD, who wrote a groundbreaking book called Emotional Intelligence. After doing years of research in biology and brain science and behavioral science, he wrote this book where he makes the case that emotional intelligence is the strongest indicator of human happiness and success, more important than intellectual IQ. Emotional intelligence, he said, is simply appropriate and skillful handling of emotions. anger, fear, happiness, love, surprise, sadness, worry, depression. Anyone can become angry, for example, he said. That's easy. But to be angry with the right person, to be upset at the right time, to the right degree, in the right way, for the right reasons, this is not easy. But emotionally intelligent people know how to take in and take captive that anger signal and then respond wisely to it. Or here's another way to say it. They know how to guard their emotions. They know how to guard their heart. And now I'm quoting, of course, from the scriptures and the wise King Solomon, who wrote in Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 23, "Above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life." And that Hebrew word there translated heart is, it's the same word translated elsewhere as mind, guard your mind, and in other places as the things you consider, and in other passages of the Hebrew scriptures, it's taken to mean the seat of your emotions, the places you feel. In other words, Solomon here in Proverbs is not saying, above all else, guard your fist-sized organ that pumps blood throughout your body. Instead, he's saying when you take in an experience and it signals a thought or emotion to you, above all else, guard that signal above all else. So, yes, pay attention to your finances, front lawn, back porch, car, career, parenting, grandparenting, schedule, social media, body mass index, and political inclinations. These are all important life demands, but the text says, there is one demand that no matter what else is on your table, you must prioritize. Because if you mess up here, everything else will be compromised. Above all else, guard your interior, for it is the wellspring of your whole life. Now, why does Solomon have to say that? Well, because some folks ignore their interior life. They stuff their emotions, or they allow their emotions to imprison them. Instead of guarding their emotions guard them. But what I want to say today is, in part one of this series, every signal is worthwhile and should be paid attention to. As the Apostle Paul writes in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, take captive every thought and make it obedient to Christ. Every thought, every time we find ourselves feeling hungry or jealous, angry, regretful, discouraged, judgmental, closed-minded, and on, take captive every thought. And what we'll discover is, if we do this, is that we're being gifted an opportunity to refresh our mindsets and to grow our lives, meaning these emotions are not enemies of discomfort. Rather, guarded well, they're signals of the shifts that need to take place in our lives. Carl Jung, a name many of you will recognize as being the influential 20th century Swiss psychiatrist and psychologist and author, his work has been groundbreaking in the fields of psychiatry, anthropology, archaeology, philosophy, religion. He wrote, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. When in reality, he goes on to say, it's just you refusing to take control and responsibility of your emotions. And so then he urges you and me to pay attention to the signals coming into our lives, something that will require emotional intelligence, guarding your heart, taking every thought captive. And let me give you a few examples of how this works with what might be called uncomfortable emotions, feelings we'd rather not have, feelings we might even call negative, but are really, if you guard them, take them captive, signals of the shifts that need to take place to move us toward the person we're capable of becoming. Here are three quick examples. Number one, envy, which, yeah, feels uncomfortable. I see something that somebody else has, notice I don't have it, and then begin to feel envious, which sometimes turns into feelings of resentment or anger or victimhood or even hate. But if we guard envy well, pray over it. Bring it before a trusted friend, family member, in the context of a loving community. Then that envy becomes a signal that shows me what I most desire for myself. Because think about it, there are things that people have that I am not envious of. That sailboat, that surfboard, those fishing poles, those pets. I am not envious because I don't want that for myself. But maybe I am envious of that body type or that skill or that accomplishment because I do want that for myself. And so I hope you see that that emotion, envy, guarded well, reveals a truth about what I can be working toward, not what I should be criticizing someone else for having, which makes envy a great mirror into my soul, a cue to become clear about who I want to be and what I want to create for myself. Now, envy is not always a great mirror, of course. It can be dangerous for your soul when it consumes you with feelings of inadequacy or jealousy and so on. But emotionally intelligent people, people who guard their hearts and interpret their uncomfortable feelings differently, come to find that at the heart of discomfort is great wisdom, and envy becomes, appropriately surrendered and interpreted, a wellspring of life. Or here's another uncomfortable emotion that's not negative if you guard it well. Guilt. Definitely not a comfortable feeling, but at the heart of this discomfort is a signal. Because if you'll take your guilt captive, guard it, pay attention to it, submit it to a trusted friend, a family member, in community, you'll see that there are two kinds of guilt. The Apostle Paul talks about this in 2 Corinthians chapter 7. He says that there's godly guilt or sorrow, and then there's ungodly guilt or sorrow. Godly guilt, he says, well, that moves you towards humility and learning and leads to new ways of thinking and acting. Ungodly guilt, on the other hand, paralyzes you or makes you feel defensive or fearful or blaming or justifying. Godly guilt, that'll move you towards people, seeking forgiveness and wanting to serve and engage with friends and others. Ungodly guilt causes you to need to be isolated. I'll just withdraw for a while. I don't need others. I'll do it all by myself. Godly guilt, it prompts you to review the details of your experience and then release it, forgetting what is behind, pressing on toward the high calling, as Paul would later write. Ungodly guilt, well, that's guilt we can't release. And we hold on to it even after forgiveness has been sought and the lesson from it has been extracted. And we end up not being a better person, but a bitter person. So when you feel guilty, if you take it captive and you guard it and allow it to lead you, it can lead you toward a better path, after which you say, ah, I now see a wellspring of life coming up because of it. Again, I know guilt is an uncomfortable emotion, but emotionally intelligent people interpret uncomfortable feelings differently, so that at the heart of the discomfort is great wisdom. And guilt, appropriately surrendered and interpreted, becomes a wellspring of life. Here's one more uncomfortable emotion that's not a negative signal if we guard it well. Discontentment. Definitely not a comfortable feeling, but at the heart of this discomfort is a signal. Let me explain. Actually, let me just quote T.D. Jakes on this. Jakes, most of you know, is the 67-year-old non-denominational pastor, author, speaker, film producer. He wrote a book a few years ago called Destiny, Step Into Your Purpose, based on his years of working with literally thousands of people across geography and social economic backgrounds. And he writes in the book this: there is more. And the fact that you desire more doesn't mean you're ungrateful for what you have or that you're greedy. It means that you recognize a higher calling. Your feelings of longing indicate that there's more beyond what you now do, more beyond what you now know, more beyond what you now possess, and more beyond what you have experienced in life thus far. They indicate a potential future life. It just exists inside of you, he says, right now in the form of a seed. Now notice what he's saying. He's saying if you look at the area of discontent, you can find a seed if you take that thought captive. And that seed of discontent can be a wellspring for something beautiful that can grow. This is my favorite line from the book. He says, quote, "If you pray and ask God for an oak tree, the Almighty will send you an acorn. Your tree is in the seed," he says. I really, really, really want an oak tree, God. Great, here's a seed. I really, really want to finish school. Great, here's the semester's syllabus. I really, really want to feel better physically. Great, here's some walking shoes. You get the idea, on and on. I really, really, really want to not be so lonely. Great, here's some GPS coordinates to that church, that club, that civic organization. Do you see it, TNC? He's saying at the heart of your discomfort, your discontent, is a signal. And your signal is a seed for your next step, which will move you toward a better life. So, guard your discontentment, because it too can become a wellspring of life. Above all else, the text says, above all else, guard your heart. I listened to an interview recently with Arthur Brooks. He's the Harvard social scientist who studies human happiness and who wrote recently two best-selling books. First one called From Strength to Strength, a 2022 publication. And then last year, he wrote a book called Build the Life You Want, The Art and Science of Getting Happier. And listen to some of what he said. Quote, most people get at least one major thing wrong when they think about happiness. They think that they can be happy. But happiness is not a destination. It's a direction. One of the most important things that we've lost sight of, particularly in the current generation of young adults, is thinking that if you're unhappy for any particular reason, something's wrong, something's abnormal. That is completely incorrect, he says. We have negative emotions that make us feel unhappy for a reason. The negative emotions are a signal that something's averse and in need of change. And then he goes on, we need sadness and anger, fear and disgust. We actually need negative experiences so that we can learn and grow. Happiness is a direction, and therefore we shouldn't be trying to attain happiness. We should be trying to attain happierness, which is obviously a made-up word, but that gets the point across. And that's what we want to do together as a TNC family, working together, loving together, encouraging together. Together is always the best environment to process your signals and consider your shifts. That's why we engage in prayer together and solitude and small groups and gathering experiences and relationships, because they help us guard our hearts. So if you're feeling discomfort today, then my prayer is that you would know that you are also being gifted an opportunity to discover a deeper reservoir for a life that overflows with things that are really, really, truly good. And we'll talk more about all of this and even go further later in the series. But for today, just know this. Above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. Let's pray. God, I pray for every person listening now. I pray that they would trust you with their interior feelings, with their heart. I pray that they would, in the process of wise counsel and community and reflection and solitude and prayer, would discover the signal of the necessary shift that needs to take place because of what's going on in their hearts. And I pray that through all of this, they would find courage and purpose and hope, and that they would experience not just your unconditional love, but that they would experience an unconditional love that would spill over into all their relationships and schedules and responsibilities. Now, TNC, I pray that the Lord would bless you and keep you, that he would make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you, that he would turn his face towards you and give you peace. Amen.